afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. And I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Thursday, January 5th, 2017. Good afternoon, Al.
Hey, Melody.
Yeah, it seems like it was just yesterday. It was Christmas.
Seems like it was just yesterday I was getting out of high school.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah. What happened? It must have been a heck of a senior prom, because it's like 50 years have gone by and I didn't even know what happened.
I don't know. How many?
50.
Okay. All right. Well, we did
all right, get 52, 53, something like that.
Well, we didn't get 50 on gold today, but we did get 18.
Yep.
$18 to the upside and 1182, but we did have a high of 1185. 1182 up 18 for gold. Silver, $16.68, up 0.18 also. Interesting. Platinum up 27, took a big jump today, almost 3% at 973. And palladium was down 3 points at 740. And the story of the day is really the dollar. It was down 1.03 at 101.49. Crude oil was down 0.39 at 53.65. Paper markets were down triple digits earlier in trade. They brought it back the last time I looked about a half hour ago. And yeah, it's still down 42 points, 19,899. The NASDAQ was up 10 at 54.87. And the S&P basically unchanged at 2269. 10-year yield dropped 0.08 at 2.37%. And foreign markets had a mixed bag over there. Some up, some down. Some who cares. But some interesting, let me bring up some reports today, if I can find them here. There was some additional information with... Well, let's talk about the dollar first. Can we?
It's okay with me. You have my permission, Melody.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, and this would be my projection on the markets. I think what happens, I mean, you know, we were supposed to get a stock market drop after the election, after we found out that Donald Trump was elected. Instead, you know, it went up, what, 2,000 points, 1,500 points, 2,000 points, almost, you know, closing in all-time records, trying to hit 20,000. But I think what's going to happen, and I think it's a common view, not a common view, but some views, the inauguration is going to be the key trigger, if it doesn't happen before. So I think once Obama gets out of office, I think that's when you're really going to see the things unwind. But yes, Al?
I was just thinking, ding dong, the witch is dead, witch, oh witch, the wicked witch. I would be like the Munchkins, you understand? We'll be singing when Obama disappears. He's gone, yay!
Well, we can sing for that, but then again, people who are holding paper dollars and paper investments, they won't be singing, or they'll be singing the blues. They'll be singing a different tune if they don't have it protected by gold and silver.
Let me make sure I understand what you're anticipating. You think the trigger is going to be the inauguration, which is, what, another 10 days, two
weeks? Yeah, I think there's going to be no one really knows. I mean, he really does, no disrespect to Mr. Trump, but he doesn't bring a lot of stability to things with his tweets. No one really knows what to expect. He says all the right things. We don't know what he can and can't do. And yes, we see the reactions from the Democrats. I really don't, which is, it's a fun thing to see. But I think, once he becomes and takes that inauguration, I think, or slowly leading up to that, I think we'll experience what everyone thought we would experience at the election.
All right. You think it's a trigger for the market to go down?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I mean, there's a lot of other things as triggers. I mean, you could, put it into a pinata, hit it, and, everything coming out would be reasons why the markets are going to go down. There's so many of them. But I think this is what we'll see. could be before, but I think once Obama is out of there, and I heard the moving vans pulled up to the White House today, so yay. But anyway, Mexico today, the central bank sold dollars. And today, to fight off the peso's nosedive to record lows. And again, this is fears on the President-elect Trump's protectionist policies could further hammer the Latin America's second biggest economy. Central bank sold at least $1 billion in U.S. currency in morning trade. This is from Reuters. We're told by traders. No one was identified because they were not supposed to speak publicly. The bank kept the amount confidential. So we have to base it on sources. Mexico's Currency Commission said in a separate statement that the move was aimed at providing liquidity and combating the recent volatility in the peso, adding that it could not rule out further discretionary intervention to support their currency. The dollar sales marks the bank's first currency intervention since February 2016, when it sold $2 billion to prop up the sinking peso. The peso depreciated 20% last year alone and was among the world's worst performing currencies. What was interesting, though, today, the peso did strengthen a little bit, but then it got into more choppy trade after Trump tweeted about Toyota Motors, that if they followed through on a plan to build a factory in Mexico, that they would be hit with a big border tax. So it didn't help Mexico's peso, and it didn't help Toyota's shares. They went down. And
didn't help the dollar necessarily either. Do you think that the sale of pesos in Mexico is what pushed the dollar a point down on the dollar index?
No, it's not the only sale. China.
No, I understand. China's, but do you think it helped?
I think with the combination of both, but probably China's strengthened. They're in there strengthening their currency. That probably had more of a bigger drop. But I think, again, the volatility, and I think, yeah, it's a combination of everything.
Right.
And it's like no one knows what to expect, and markets don't like that, except gold. Gold market loves it. And that's why, you know, we're just going to have an incredible year for gold, but we're going to have a devastating year for everything else.
Well, we shall see.
And just like last night, I was with my family, and I don't say much. They know what I do, what I think, and so forth. And, you know, every once in a while you get the little...
I tell whatever you do, don't start with Aunt Melody. You understand? Don't talk to her about religion. Don't talk to her about gold or economics.
No, but...
Talk about tomatoes.
The point is, you know, there was a comment about bank stocks are doing well. Their bank stocks are doing well. But this is what you hear, and I relate it to... You know, not family, but I relate it to, because I hear it other places too, people are beginning to comment on how well their shares are doing. So again, it's the same thing when Rockefeller was getting his, you know, his shoes shined by the boot boy back, in 1928, prior to the stock market collapse of 29, you know, he started getting, comments about shares from the shoeshine boy, and it's kind of like the same. You know,
everybody's in the market.
Everybody is optimistic. Everybody is thrilled to death that their shares are doing so well, and nobody has a clue. And that's when things usually change. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a sign of a peak. It's a sign of the peak. But so anyway, you had the peso selling off today. Or they're trying to strengthen, and you had the U.S. dollar selling.
Well, I'm falling. Today. Which, yes. I think the government, again, I've argued it for 18 months or so, that the government needs the dollar to go down on the dollar index just to make the national debt, you can pay it off with cheaper dollars. It essentially diminishes the size of the national debt. And I've been surprised that the government has allowed this to go as long as it can, as long as it has. I don't know if they've got the means to make the dollar inflate, or they don't have it. But they need it. They need the inflation to pay to deal with national debt.
But that's what most people don't understand. I mean, I do believe, absolutely. I mean, They're going to have a weaker currency, period. We have inflation. We have a fiat currency. Inflation is a given. Lower currency, lower dollar is a given. I mean, that is a truth that, you know, that is one prediction that will be true. But I also believe at the point in time for the past 18 months, for whatever reason, whether it be the U.S. or whether it be the world markets, whether and mainly investors, that's what all gained the dollar strength. Was it orchestrated by Federal Reserve? Did they need it for whatever reasons in commitments to foreign countries, to Europe, to Japan? Absolutely. The dollar didn't go up there because the Federal Reserve lost control of it. You know, they needed it for whatever reason they needed it, but it killed the multinational corporations and their profits. So for whatever reason, yeah, I do believe it's all orchestrated.
You know? Well, I don't know if you can say it's orchestrated, but it is influenced, that's for sure. I don't know that they control it, but they can make things tend to happen, maybe not exactly happen, but tend to happen. They make some things more likely than not, even though it defies reality.
Whatever they use to influence is orchestrated. So, however, yesterday we talked about Macy's poor holiday sales. The news continued in today with Kohl's also getting hammered with poor holiday sales. You had Macy's shares. They fell today 14%. That was their biggest drop in 7 months. Kohl's shares dropped as much as 20.5%. That's their biggest decline in more than 14 years. Both reported lower than expected sales for November and December, and they also cut their full-year profit forecasts for the year.
They have what I'm curious about were sales, total sales. All right, were they as high or higher than they were last year? And these are stores where didn't catch the wave, they were rejected, or are sales down across the board for everybody?
Pretty much a lot. Everybody. Amazon said it had its best ever holiday season, shipping more than 1 billion items worldwide. But you have Penney's, Nordstrom, they also, their shares also fell.
You know why? They don't have any robots. Amazon has thousands of robots.
The National Retail Federation, they forecast that the 2016 holiday period sales would rise 3.6% to $356 billion. I think if everyone remembers, Donald Trump said that the holiday sales went over $1 trillion. So that's not real. That's not true. And I doubt that even the National Retail Federation had a proper forecast.
Do you want a conspiracy theory, Melody?
Sure.
A little conspiracy theory.
Sure.
The Trump rally, after Trump was elected, stocks go up. One of the effects of that is people are going to be able to say that when Trump took office, at least as things stand at the moment, they'll be able to look back and say, when Trump took office, Obama left him with a $20,000 or 20,000 point Dow. And if the crash comes later, they can blame it on Trump. Well, look, Obama left you with a 20,000-point Dow, and now it's all gone to heck, and it must be your fault, Mr. Trump, and we can blame you for whatever happens to the market. Again, it's a conspiracy theory, and I'm not saying it's valid, but it's the sort of thing that wouldn't exactly surprise me.
But knowing how the electoral votes turned out and the pressure for getting them to change, if they wanted him out, all they would have had to do is let the market drop, and I'll guarantee you there would have been more votes against him at that point in time.
If the market had dropped
3,000-5,000 points, you bet you. He wouldn't, you know, it's a possibility, we don't know,
If Trump had been knocked out of the presidency one way or the other,
this country,
presumably Hillary would have been the president-elect.
And then
I think the markets, I don't know, I think they would be inclined to puke. If Hillary was elected, I think the markets are just, oh my cool, you know. I just don't see that as cause for celebration, and I could be wrong about that, but this whole election was so bizarre that even people in positions of power probably got to a point where just let it go, leave it alone, I don't know what's going on here, but let's not get involved and make it any worse. We can always just gut the Department of Ethics after the Republicans win the election.
We also
and I'm being facetious, of course, but they tried to gut it, but it turned into just a political disaster for them. How stupid can you be?
We also had Sears Holdings. They announced plans to shutter 150 stores as part of an effort to turn around the ailing chain. And I guess they also sold their tools.
Oh yeah, the Craftsman tools.
The Craftsman tool to Black and Decker.
Yeah,
they sure did.
Yep.
But so we have Macy's. They're going to be eliminating 6,200 jobs. Not quite sure how many jobs Sears will be letting go, how many jobs they will let go with their store closures.
You got 150 stores going down. You got to have at least one employee per store.
At least one.
You know, because I know I've been over there and you can't find anybody, but I think there has to be at least one guy there to turn the lights on in the morning, turn them off at night.
But you know what? You know, they're saying that people are beginning the holidays. They're not spending. They're changing their spending habits. More money is spent on dining out and traveling than it is going to the store to buy apparel and so forth. So, like I said once before, you can only have so many sweaters.
And you can only have so many plastic toys stacked up in the garage before you can't open a door without having them all fall out like McGee's Closet back in the day. That may be, in order to stimulate the economy, Melody, we may have to have cheap garage additions so we can store more stuff in the garage that we've bought for Christmas.
I remember leading up to 2008, you laugh, but storage facilities, they were a big boom during that time because that's what people were doing. They were going and getting storage facilities so they could store their Chinese stuff.
Well, I understand, because they were losing their homes.
It was before they were losing their homes. They didn't have enough. They didn't have enough to store in their homes to store their stuff. So they went out and got storage. And storage, there was a boom on storage facilities and storage.
You mean
units.
This was a reflection of how much they were buying.
How much they were buying.
They're buying so much extra stuff they didn't have place to store.
This was way before the crash.
All right, we'll be back and talk more about the crash on financial survival in just a couple of moments. Please stay tuned. Melody and I will be right back.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. TalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Hi, folks. I'm Alfred Adask, here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. The program is brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188. What's next, Melody?
I just have two things here. One, and we talk about a lot of debt here, government debt, and the total global debt tops 325% of GDP as government debt jumps. So they rose to more than 325% of the world's gross domestic product last year as the government debt rose sharply. This is from a report from the Institute for International Finance. The Institute for International Finance found that the global debt had risen more than $11 trillion in the first 9 months of 2016 to more than $217 trillion. The report also found that the general government debt accounted for nearly half of the total increase. Emerging market debt rose substantially as government bond and syndicated loan issuance in 2016 grew to almost three times its 2015 level. China accounted for the lion's share of the new debt, providing $710 million of the total $855 billion in new issuance during the year.
That debt for China? Three times higher than it was in 2015.
Yeah.
Higher. Three times. Yeah. Right? That signals something is happening. You triple the debt in a 12-month period of time, something's going on. And my guess is China is teetering. It may not appear to be true for most observers, but it seems to me that that's got to be... That's evidence that they are anticipating some serious trouble. They're trying to avoid the trouble, paper it over. I don't know, but
and they continue to go on and talk about the higher borrowing costs in the wake of the U.S. presidential election and other stresses, including an environment of subdued growth and still weak corporate profitability, a stronger U.S. dollar. Right, you know, so everybody wants a weaker dollar. Rising sovereign bond yields. Higher hedging costs, deterioration in corporate credit worthiness. These are all challenges for borrowers.
It's interesting to me. The article says, with borrowing costs across mature and emerging markets on the rise in the wake of the U.S. presidential election. They're blaming the election for an increase in borrowing costs. And I doubt that that's accurate.
Well, you did.
It may be that you could sit.
The rates did rise after the election. It didn't.
Oh, I get that.
They did rise. They rose a lot after the election.
I get that,
a
but
lot.
Again, that's like, I don't know. It's.
They did. There's
a coincidence, but is there a cause and effect? I'm thinking interest rates rose for different reasons than the presidential election, and it's just interesting to me. I don't doubt it had some sort of an influence on it, but I'm inclined to think that blame the presidential election. I think the borrowing costs are up for other reasons that are more significant that they may not want to talk about.
It's probably a combination, but I think everyone knows with this president that there is going to be the volatility, and you're going to have higher rates. In order to, so I think to some degree, and I think that's why they stopped where they did, you know, then we had the rate increase, and they really haven't done much after the rate increase. They really haven't done anything after she increased the rate. So
we gave thanks to God that it didn't cause another collapse in the markets. They did that probably. We didn't see them, but I'm going to assume that's true. One of the things in that article that struck me, again, interesting. It says the increase, speaking of the global debt, has been most pronounced for global government debt, up $5.3 trillion to some $60 trillion. Now there, according to this article, the total government debt globally is $60 trillion. And our government admits to having $20 trillion in national debt at this time, and the number is probably much higher than that, according to John Williams and ShadowStats.com and Congressional Budget Office and Lawrence Kotlikoff, The Economist. They estimate it's multiples of that. But even if it's only $20 trillion, that's one-third of all the government debt in the world has been produced by our government. I find that remarkable. You know? We have, and I don't see that as a good sign. We keep going deeper and deeper into debt. Sooner or later, somebody's going to say, hey, how about you guys pay off this debt rather than just rolling it over? And the government's going to have to admit, sorry, we can't pay it off. The only thing we can do is borrow more to roll over the existing debt. Pay for the existing debt over with more debt. Can't, you know, this is equivalent to using your MasterCard to pay off your Visa, to pay off your American Express. Sooner or later, that formula is going to blow up in your face, and I look at this,
And we did talk about earlier in this week or last week where you have, you know, $1 trillion worth of bonds and loans that are going to come due this year. So, you know, And it's when we see the amount of debt that is increased and we look at the world economies, anything that's been positive has all been, you know, I mean, it's just based on absolutely nothing but debt.
Yeah.
And I just...
No, we have a debt-based monetary system, and that's the danger in all of this.
Absolutely.
We no longer have an asset-based monetary system. It's all based on just promises to pay.
Okay.
And the promises we have accepted, if the government comes along, the U.S. government says, oh, we promise to pay. Oh, yeah, well, sure. We'll go along with that. We believe you because you're the government of the United States. It's just foolishness. It can't be paid. It won't be paid. Right? And sooner or later, that's going to be recognized. And when it does, all kinds of terrible things happen. Cancel the debt. Either you can't raise taxes enough to pay it. If you cancel it, and I've said it 50 times on this program, cancel the debt, you cancel the correlative U.S. bonds that memorialize the debt. And they're being held in people's pension funds and the bank's vaults being used as collateral to lend money to the taxpayers and bank customers and the rest of it. You cancel those debts and pension funds across the country are going to be wrecked. The bonds and the pension funds will no longer be valid. You can't cancel the debt and you can't pay the debt. What are you going to do with the debt? The only thing you can do right now is simply try to kick the can a little further down the road and buy more time and hope for some sort of a miracle that I don't think anyone can define. We need something spectacular to happen, but what? Can't pay the debt, can't repudiate the debt. What are you going to do with the debt? So, you know, again, global debt. Again, the headline here was global debt surges in 2016. And it's certainly raised trouble. We have an article here from the Associated Press. GOP Senator Rand Paul blasts party leaders for ignoring debt. That's the headline. Republican Senator Rand Paul on Wednesday blasted fellow GOP lawmakers for ignoring the government's spiraling debt problem in their rush to repeal President Barack Obama's health care law. Paul, who hails from the GOP's small government libertarian wing, was the sole Republican. He was the only Republican to oppose party leaders and President-elect Donald Trump on a 51-48 procedural vote that's a precursor to the upcoming legislation to repeal the Affordable Care Act. The Kentucky senator opposes the measure a budget blueprint for the current fiscal year because it ended an almost 10 because excuse me because it endorses an almost $10 trillion increase in the national debt over the coming decade. I don't believe that for a minute. Obama in eight, well, I guess that actually is, that's comparable to what Obama has done in his term of office. I guess that is correct. He increased the national debt in the neighborhood $9 trillion in his 8 years. So $10 trillion over the next decade is not unreasonable. But even so, do you think we can we continue to go as deep into debt as quickly as Obama did? He doubled the national debt, or nearly doubled it, increased it by, you know, almost doubled it in 8 years. Can we continue? Can we increase the national debt at a similar rate in the next 10 years? You look at this, and it's just one of those things. You sit back and say, "Look, this does not. I don't think this is going to fly." Wilbur, Orville, I think you need to get back to the drawing board, because I don't think this. You're not going to make an airplane out of this one. This one's not getting off the ground. And what happens when they can't get more debt to roll over the existing debt? The more things change, this is Rand Paul. He says, the more things change, the more they seem to stay the same. What will the first order of business be for the new Republican majority? To pass a budget that never balances? To pass a budget that will add $9.7 trillion to new debt over 10 years? Is that really what we campaigned on? Is that really what the Republican Party represents? And he goes on, he says, I was told again and again, swallow it, take it, they're just numbers, don't worry, it's not really a budget. And Paul, I mean, that's crazy. He's got senators that don't worry about it. They're not paying. This doesn't mean anything, it's just numbers. It's just numbers. Really? That's what this is? People running this country are saying, well, they're just numbers. They pay no attention to that. It's just and Paul says, if they're only numbers, why don't we put numbers in that balance? Right? How about that? It's only numbers. How about we balance the budget rather than we go deeper into debt? What about that? The whole thing is part of the madness that follows with having a debt-based monetary system. But Paul told reporters, he said, I frankly think the debt is more important than any policy. Yeah, he's exactly right. We've been telling you that for years on this program. The debt is unpayable. Sooner or later, that fact is going to wreck a lot of people's lives. Lots of people are sitting around holding bonds, U.S. government bonds. And then there's corporate debt and private debt and the rest of that that's added on. But the debt is too great to be repaid. Which means, and that means you don't want, what it means to me is I don't want to be caught holding a piece of paper that promises, whether it's a stock or a bond or whatever, the paper is nothing but a promise to pay at a time when there's too much out there, too many promises, can't all be kept. You're taking a risk if you're holding your wealth in the form of a piece of paper, which is one of the reasons why we harp and say, look, you need to get your wealth and store it in something tangible like gold or silver in order to avoid, when this thing goes down, everybody's hanging on to the paper debt is going to, I mean, they're going to be screaming. And you wonder about some of this, how people can be so incredibly unintelligent. And the classic example is people investing in Comex gold market, where there are allegedly 400 or 500 paper claims on every 1 ounce of physical gold. How crazy is that? You don't have an investment. You have a lottery. You invest in gold, in paper gold. I invest in paper gold. Melody invests in paper gold. We got 500 people investing in paper gold, and one of us is going to win that lottery. It's not an investment. 499 out of 500 are going to lose. I mean, it's just crazy, and people are trusting their futures to this. Let me sit back and we'll tell you, look, stay away from the paper if you have any chance to do so. And Rand Paul apparently agrees with that. And he's warning, you know, blasts the party leaders for ignoring the debt. But what do you suppose Rand Paul thinks we can do with the debt, Melody?
You tell us, Al.
Well, I don't think he. I think the fact that Rand Paul is blasting the party leaders for ignoring the debt, to me, it's evidence that Rand Paul doesn't really understand the debt. Right? He's looking at it from a simple perspective of, we just have too much debt and we have to eliminate the debt. I'm looking at it from the perspective, we're in a debt-based monetary system. We're in a debt-based economy. And there's nothing you can do to get rid of the debt without wrecking the economy.
I think he understands.
The rest of the congressmen or the rest of the senators, they said, oh, shut up, Sonny. There's nothing we can do about the debt without wrecking the economy. They didn't say it out loud, but I think perhaps that's the way they're thinking.
I think he understands.
Well, maybe
considering
he does.
Who his father is. And
I agree
and
that
so
he
forth.
Should. I agree now, that he should.
And, you know, he was one of the few, I think there was one other one who actually mentions a gold back system.
Yeah, they talk about it. I heard that Trump has appointed a number of people to his cabinet that are allegedly pro-gold. Now, I've read a report on that, whether it's true or not, you know, and even if it is true, it doesn't mean that they're going to do anything particularly good for gold.
Trump, I even heard Trump say that, you know, we'd never go back to a gold-backed standard. We wouldn't go to a gold standard.
Well, we won't go voluntarily.
You know, and that's
I'll give you that. We're never going to voluntarily go back to the gold standard because if we do, say, all right, let's take a vote. Everybody
well, yeah.
going back to the gold standard. Fine, let's take a vote. And if 51% say
at that time.
Now what? That means we have just destroyed the paper monetary system, the debt-based monetary system on which the entire economy depends. We can't do that. We can't go to gold without the economy collapsing. And therefore, we will not, in my opinion, voluntarily go to gold.
Absolutely
but
not.
We will go to gold after the economy collapses and people are tired of living in, you know, in caves and under a tree and the rest of that sort of thing.
And that's not even necessarily
true. What about an asset-based monetary system? How about that?
That's not necessarily true.
Well, I guarantee it is. It's not necessarily true, but still.
That's the logical thing, but, I mean, we certainly have seen other countries that have been in the same position and collapsed and had hyperinflation, and you know they don't back their currency with gold after that. So
well, I know they don't, but they still like Greece. There, I mean, smartest thing Greece could do perhaps is to terminate, get clear of the European Union, which is a bunch of bankers, and just say, look, here we are, and we're going to bank the drachma, we're going to put it up, we're going to back it with gold, we're going to back it with silver, we're going to have an asset-based monetary system, and they'd probably get bombed by Brussels. But it might be the smartest thing they could do to put their country back on the right track. Recreate a debt or an asset-based monetary system. Maybe that's the solution, at least for a lot of countries that are in big trouble. We're going to take a break for some commercials. Melody and I'll be back in a moment. Please stay tuned.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Folks, I'm Alfred Addisk here with Melody Cedarstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver. I've got a story with a moral to it, Melody.
Okay.
This is from Inside Edition. And the headline is, Lucky, the two-headed calf dies a week before receiving life-changing surgery. And this is just so, this cracks me up. Lucky. Kentucky's beloved two-headed calf. The calf is only a little over 3 months old when it died. How does the whole state of Kentucky determine that this calf is beloved? It seems to me that that language is a little bit extreme. But in any case, the two-headed calf has died. And a week before it was due to receive potentially life-changing surgery. Apparently they were going to give it some cosmetic surgery. Make its two heads look more, I don't know, acceptable. But Brad McCubbin, the owner of Taylor County Farm, he said, we got her longer than we ever thought we would. It's been hard, but we kind of expected it. Apparently, the two-headed calves don't last that long. Lucky was born on September 16th, 2016, and lived for 108 days before passing away Monday. She is the longest surviving calf born with two faces. After the previous record holder reportedly survived for only 40 days. So what's the moral to the story, Melody?
You tell us, Al.
Two heads are not always better than one. See that? Somebody tells you two heads are better than one, you say, nope. Look at the example of Lucky the two-headed calf. She only lived for 108 days. So there's the moral to the story.
Okay.
Just Todd, our producer, he should have some rim shots or something where we do some of these, and Todd could tell, you know, hit the drum, do a rim shot on some of these. What else, Melody? What's next?
Do you think it's actually never mind, let's move on now.
All right. Unrest over Mexico gasoline.
You know what I say to this is, Inside Edition, how do we know it's even a true story? There's so much
fake news anymore.
Did you see pictures? That doesn't matter.
Have you seen that video? You think they photoshopped a picture of a two-headed calf?
Have you seen that video of the little boy that pulled a, there was, what, two twins? They were playing in their bedroom.
I haven't watched the video, but I've seen it.
And they pulled the dresser down on themselves, and, you know. They now say that that's a possibility, that that's a fake.
Yeah, I know.
So you just don't know anymore.
Oh, ye of little faith!
but all the
see a video
the argument,
on YouTube and you think it's fake news.
That's, the argument really brings a lot of question to the credibility of the story the video.
I don't know.
People will do anything.
I haven't seen the video.
People will do anything for money.
Well, I don't know if they've made any money, but they get a little attention, perhaps.
Well, what? All they had to do was sue IKEA for the dressers falling over. Oh, the children weren't injured, but
the dresser was on top of one of the children, 2 years old. They're two twins, and the other twin reportedly pushed the dresser off the first twin. And the theory is the first twin might have been suffocated by the pressure of the dresser on him. But anyway, it all worked out well, and the one twin is the hero who saved his twin.
I guess the father worked for the company for the camera that was video videotaping the situation. And a lot of people question, why would it be videotaping a corner of a dresser? Usually if you're watching your child in the room, it's focused on the bed area for sleeping at night. So the position of the camera would bring into question, plus that he works for the company that manufactures the camera. The items, the dresser drawers, were empty.
Not much weight.
There wasn't anything set on top. You know, everybody sets things on top of dressers, whether it be a picture or a doll or, you know, a child's room. You have all sorts of, you know, cosmetics and things like you need for children of that age and so forth. So there wasn't anything on top of the dresser. And there were several other things that they brought into question. So you just don't know. So.
Well, that's why we just.
So
have
that's
to
why
trust,
I was questioning
Melody.
If Lucky
have to trust
really
in
had
YouTube.
To don't question if Lucky really had two faces. But I think we spent 3 minutes on this. I think we can
move on to a different topic.
Move on to something else. Yes, please.
All right.
Please.
Again, the moral of the story: two heads are not necessarily better
We've
than one.
We've heard that, Al. What's next?
I understand that, but I just want to make sure people don't forget. Here's unrest over Mexico gasoline price hike erupts into looting. This is from the Associated Press. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Protests over a sharp gasoline price hike erupted into looting of gas stations and stores in various parts of Mexico on Wednesday, with dozens of businesses reportedly sacked. Protesters also continued to block highways, burn tires, and seize gas stations, snarling traffic and jeopardizing fuel supplies across the country. National Association of Self-Service and Department Stores in Mexico said that 79 stores had been looted and 170 were closed or blockaded in central Mexico, including the capital. In the Gulf Coast city of Veracruz, 50 establishments, including convenience stores, supermarkets with big box outlets, suffered looting. And the point of the story is, and what happened? Well, one thing, 14 people were detained by the police. They've got 170 stores that were 79 looted, 170 were closed or blockaded, and they've managed to detain 14 people. Doesn't sound like all that effective police to me. At one supermarket, officials fired into the air to disperse the multitudes. The multitudes are restless, Melody. Store guards were overrun by crowds who carried off clothing, food, washing machines, televisions, DVD players, and refrigerators. And what triggered all of this is Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto told the airwaves to defend his unpopular gasoline deregulation measure that resulted in a price hike of up to 20% over the weekend. Raised the price of gasoline 20% over the weekend, and people rioted. You know, that to me is evidence that Mexico is another one of these countries that is teetering on the edge. 170 stores looted? Because the price of gasoline went up 20% over the weekend? I don't know. You know, I don't know what to make of that, but it does not, people are living in serious poverty down there. In fact, they say Mexico just raised a minimum wage for a day's work, 80 pesos, which is about $4. $4 a day, minimum wage. That country has got to be. You can understand why people fight and struggle to get into the United States. They can stay home and maybe make $4 a day. Or they can come to the United States and maybe get on welfare. What about that, Melody? Or send in income tax returns where you get fat returns even if the income tax returns are fraudulent. But you can see a joke about it on one level, but the truth is it's serious business. Mexican people, minimum wage, $4 a day. That means Mexico is a bomb waiting to go off. And you look at it and you have to think, what will the impact be for the United States if and when Mexico hits that critical situation? What will that impact be? I mean, I'm going to hope that Trump gets his wall up between the United States and Mexico before Mexico bursts into flames.
Well, you know, when the world, I mean, we see all these countries that are, you know, certainly struggling, and you know, we know things are going to become much worse. The United States, not just Trump, but the United States will be blamed for a lot of their misery. And you're right, Mexico for one. You know, and the vehicles that are shipped to Mexico, I mean, and that relationship, I mean, it's just everything is just a mess. But the United States as a whole will be blamed.
I understand that.
And they will react to the United States, not just to the President of the United States.
There'll be political revolution. There was a time in my life I visited Mexico every year for a few years. Right? I'd go down there for vacations. I enjoyed it. I liked the country. I liked the people and one thing and another. I would be wary of going down there today. When I was going down there, this would be 40 years ago, something like that. It really was a friendly place. Not perfectly and all the rest of it, but it was friendly. And people are getting by. I don't think that's the case anymore. I think they are desperate. You go down there, if they think you've got 50 cents sure. in your pocket, it
that's,
might be enough to get your throat slit.
That's what happens, though, Al.
I
mean, you bring wealth to, you know, and, you know, people better themselves. They work. They, $4 a day is still low, but, I mean, it's better than what they had before. And now all of that is threatened. And, yeah, they're going to react.
Well, this, you know, I'm reminded of the Arab Spring from, I believe it was 2011, where one Tunisian street peddler doused himself in gasoline, set himself on fire because economic conditions were so horrible in Tunisia. And it triggered country after country in the Middle East, erupted. And some of them, governments were nearly overthrown, some places they were. Right? Mexico is kind of like that, I think. If we can believe, if people are rioting over a 20% increase in the price of gasoline, I get that 20% is kind of significant, but really, it's going from a couple bucks a gallon on up to $2.40 a gallon. If you're going to riot over a 40 or 50 cent increase in the price of gasoline, you have to be pretty desperate. And it's the sort of thing where you have to wonder, how stable is Mexico? We saw a report that Ford has been persuaded one way or another. The Ford CEO denies claims that Trump is to thank for the change of plans. Ford canceled its plan to build a plant in Mexico. That's from ABC News. Ford may be just looking at how volatile it's going to be down there. It may be a dangerous place to be if you're a gringo. Yeah. Do you want to go down there if people are ready to riot over 40 or 50 cents a gallon for gasoline? Doesn't sound like a safe place to me. And what are they going to do in the event that the political system explodes under the weight of the poverty and prices for oil, gasoline, whatever? Assuming that things get bad down there, what will the result be? I mean, they could wind up with a government that was just absolutely antagonistic to the United States. New candidates could run for office, and they could say it is the evil Satan, the United States, that's to blame for all the problems in Mexico. And it would be the kind of political slogans and party principles that, you never know, could win the day, could win election. Then what? I mean, and the point in all of this is that we live in interesting times. We live in unstable times. And I don't think any of us can sit back and just say, well, whatever's happening right now, it won't get any worse than that. Right? Everything's good. We can keep on muddling through. Nothing to worry about. I'm inclined to look at it and say, maybe not. Maybe there are legitimate concerns, and if you agree with that, then maybe it's not a bad idea. You know, get yourself some life preservers. Worst case scenario. You know, maybe it's unlikely, maybe it's improbable, maybe it's never going to happen, but on the other hand, It's like having automobile insurance for your car when you're driving down the highway. Yeah, you probably won't get in a wreck, and you probably won't ever really need that insurance. But if you do, you're gonna want that insurance. And one of the things, there are a bunch of things that you can use for some kind of insurance in the event that we're coming on trouble. But one of them, of course, is gold and silver. Sort of thing where he's, all right, you got some. Got some in the box, all right, just in case. Got some dehydrated food, got some jugs of water, not a bad idea, because we live in interesting times, we live in unstable times, and it's up to every one of us to do what you can to protect yourself and ensure your future, your family's future. Because if things really do break down, who is going to provide for you? Who's going to provide for the guy across the street and people down the block? I doubt that the government has the resources to really deal with a serious economic problem in this country. And if we really had the least likely, event, which would be a total collapse, least likely, but just the same, if we had that, who's going to get you through that until the country gets back on its feet? And I doubt that the government has the resources to do it, which is part of the reason why you sit back and say, maybe I'm responsible for myself. Maybe I have to get whatever I think I might need in a worst-case situation. I think I'll buy some insurance. We're out of time. Melody and I will be back tomorrow. Hope you'll tune in at that time. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you and me and Melody and Todd, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay. Still, there never seems to be a single penny left for me.
That's too bad.
In my